Hello, figure skating fans, and welcome to Ice Network's debut episode of the Ice Talk Podcast, a new regular series that focuses on all things figure skating. This season will bring you regular shows of Ice Talk as the Grand Prix series goes on in lead up to the World Championships in Helsinki next year, and all eyes fixed off in the distance on the 2018 Winter Olympic Games in Pyeongchang, South Korea. I'm Nick McCarville, your host on Ice Talk and an Ice Network contributor and a New York City-based journalist. On Ice Talk, you'll hear my exclusive interviews with your favorite skaters, coaches, choreographers, Olympians, experts, and many, many more. We aim to give you insight you can't find anywhere else as you hear from the biggest movers and shakers inside this sport. Most of our episodes will be styled in what we call a short program format, around 30 minutes for easy-to-listen consumption by you, while we'll feature several long program podcast episodes where we dive even deeper into special topics with the help of our Ice Talk guests. Now, we never want you to hesitate to let your voice be heard. Want a special guest? Need to hear from your favorite skater? Or do you have an issue that you think we just must debate? Let us know on Twitter with tweets to Ice Network, or use the hashtag IceTalk, or tweet at me, Nick McCarville. All right, well, I'm joined in studio by Jackie Wong of Rocker Skating. Jackie, how are you?
I'm good. A lot of tweeting going on last weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, first off, what you feel like the biggest storylines are for you coming into this Grand Prix season.
I mean, there are a lot of things going on, right?
Yeah.
You got...
Where to start?
You got... We're what, 14, 15, 16 months from mm-hmm. the next Olympics. And so this season really is one of those seasons where you start seeing the movements, right? Mm-hmm. Last season was a huge kind of trajectory toward the big quads in men's figure skating. This season, we've already had a new quad, right? Yuzuru Han,
yep.
just landed the first quad loop. And I'll certainly give credit to Alexei Krasnazan too, right? He stood up the first fully rotated quad loop ever, right, in competition. So it's going to be another arms race there with the quads, and I think that's something that I'm really looking forward to seeing. Like, is it going to be a bunch of mistake-filled programs, or is it going to be a bunch of spectacular programs?
I will say, in Sochi, it felt like we were sort of at a breaking point of where was it going to go. I think the guys have now settled into it. So it'll be interesting, as you're saying, in the next 16 months to watch it solidify itself moving towards the Olympics.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, on the ice dance side, obviously, Virtue Moir coming
back.
Virtue Moir coming back. No idea how they're gonna fare against, you know, Gabrielle and Guillaume, right?
Yeah.
So it's like that's a very intriguing one. And you've got the Shibs, and you've got Madison Nevin, you've got, you know, like it's a reconvergence of ice dance royalty.
Yeah, it's
right?
endless. Right.
So we'll see how that goes. But you know, add all the ice dance teams, and you got 8-9 teams that can be on the podium,
mm-hmm.
right, at
mm-hmm.
once.
Right.
So, you know, with pair skating, it's another one where the horizon is just out of this world.
Yeah.
The throw triple axles,
right.
the new side-by-side jumps, and it's just, it's exciting. And you're seeing all of these teams not only doing the technical, the really difficult technical tricks, but they're also bringing great lifts, they're bringing chemistry to the ice, they're bringing choreography like you haven't really seen before.
Mm.
And there's just, across the board, there's just a different level of pair skating that's been happening for the last few years that I think is gonna be a really exciting event next
year.
Do
you feel like Megan and Eric are still that team to beat, though?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think they'll be the first ones to tell you that I got the prediction completely wrong last year, right? Like, I really thought they had peaked too soon last year, and
mm-hmm.
then they came back and won it all, like, spectacularly, right? And this year, yeah, they're definitely coming in as favorites. You know, Tatiana and Max are out for the season. Indefinitely, I guess, with the baby coming. You've got a lot of great stuff. I think they are the favorites but there's a lot of competition coming up, and they know it, and that's why that triple axel's in there now.
And I love how somehow we've previewed the season and the ladies are last.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much to talk about there, but there really is. Each discipline has so many storylines, as you said, 16 months out from PyeongChang.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we just saw a junior Grand Prix series. It's still kind of going, but dominated by Russian and Japanese female skaters. Right. And on the senior side, you've got the Japanese and you've got the Russians, you've got the Americans, you've got the Canadians, you've got like, it's another kind of convergence of really fantastic skaters. And you know, the Japan Open a couple of days ago was exactly what we were kind of expecting, that they, you know, the women were picking up where they left off.
Yeah, absolutely. So next week I'm going to talk with Phil Hirsch, Ice Network contributor, about Skate America. We'll do a lead-in program there, but we'll talk a lot about the U.S. skating scene. What do you see internationally? We kind of touched on a few hot topics there, but are there skaters that you really feel like people should keep an eye out for this season that are names that we're not yet familiar with?
Yeah, on the women's side, you know, the first thing that came to my head was Wakaba Higuchi, right? She is making her debut this season in the seniors, and you know, she's a fantastic skater. But so far, like, the dark horse has been Mai Mihara. She just came in a couple weeks ago and winning a competition with you know, a clean 7-triple program. So, you know, the Japanese women, I think this year it's going to be an interesting fight. It's you know, you've got the Maosadas, you've got the Satoko Miharas, mm-hmm. you've got Rika Hongo, you've got a lot of skaters who could make that world championship team,
right.
And you could have some surprises this year.
Hmm. Do you feel like, I mean, that's almost the gift that keeps giving, that Japanese, the as far as the Japanese women,
yeah.
and the Russian
and
women
the Russian
too,
women. Yep.
Because, you know, here we are, and coming off the seasons that we have, we still might have someone out of those two countries coming into PyeongChang with a chance at a medal,
yep.
that we're not even quite aware of,
yeah.
yet.
Yeah.
You're probably aware of.
I mean, if you follow the junior Grand Prix, you see it, but you know, I think at this point you're really seeing the ones that are going to be there. It's tough to see in such a deep field that, you know, a junior skater is going to come up next year and really have that whole package to pull it off. But you know, who knows? I mean, Medvedeva did that just this year, right? So
she absolutely did.
So yeah, and then Carolina Costner coming back, maybe not. I'm not really sure what her status is right now, right? At least I don't know.
Yeah.
But she's supposed to be coming back later in the kind of fall/early winter.
I think
winter.
The plan is Italian Nationals would
yeah.
be her first, and maybe a Senior B before that,
right.
depending on. Yeah, but how great would it be to see?
Yeah.
Carolina back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she's got the whole package
yeah.
to kind of get back up there. So
very
exciting season all across the board.
Absolutely. So I want to divert just for a minute, because you've been doing, well, I've been wondering this for a long time, is what you do in rocker skating and tweeting and live events to me feels exhausting, just knowing that you're doing it. Tell me a little bit about your approach and how sort of you go about things for the website, for the blog, and then also for Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's a dream for a multitasker, right? Like I mean, you've seen me at competitions, tweeting and blogging at the same time and
right.
tweeting multiple competitions. It's just an adrenaline rush that you get, or that I get. I don't know if anybody
Absolutely.
Else gets it, right? I think the saving grace for me is that there's so many competitions that happen overnight that I can, like, be a normal human being during the day generally. And
usually.
Yeah. And then be a night owl and basically, you know, cover the events.
But you do have a real day job.
I
do. Quite successful also. So
I do have a real day job.
Sleep has to come in somewhere,
yeah.
right?
You know, sleep comes Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, not Thursday night, not Friday night, not Saturday night, right? Yeah.
Hopefully Sunday naps.
Yeah, naps. I love naps.
And then I would assume you're using Ice Network to watch plenty, but then, I mean, even for other competitions worldwide, there's a lot of recalibrating for you to get vision of that kind of stuff too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know, you get some streams here and there. Like Japan Open just now was a stream of TV Tokyo that exists somewhere that was found.
And you found it.
And it was found. I wouldn't say I found it. Probably some skating fan found it, and I found that.
Right.
You know. No, I mean, Ice Network is basically 75-80% of my source of
right.
watching things. And then there's with the Challengers, they have other streams that are coming in. But you know, yeah, it's whatever is resourced, basically.
Poking the underbelly of the internet.
Yeah, anything you can give me as a feed, I don't care how much buffering there is. It's,
right.
You know,
right.
I'll get you the details.
So where do you see skating, you know, in and of itself? I think when I talk to people outside of the sport about it, it's kind of, oh, Michelle Kwan, right? It's, you know, still stuck in the late 90s, early 2000s. Where do you see the sport right now, and how can it try to continue and grow itself?
I mean, I think so much of the sport in the U.S., right, is about, you know, winning things and about somebody having a dominant few seasons, right? And that was Michelle in, you know, for the latter half of the 90s and the early part
right.
of the 2000s, and that's where the notoriety came from, right? So, you know, you'll have to... It could very well be an Ashley or a Gracie, right? And ladies figure skating, for whatever reason, is always the kind of showstopper.
What grabs people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think for U.S. skating, or at least the audience for U.S. skating, that's going to be one of the keys, is just, you know, if there is a skater who can be up there for a few years and really be consistent, that's where the audience kind of comes back a little bit more.
Do you see an American right now that you feel like could... I mean, Ashley is doing that, I think. She just won her first world title this last year, or her first world silver medal, first world medal
yeah.
of any color. But do you see any...
Breaking
young,
the drought.
Yeah, right? The 10-year
drought.
Drought. Do you see any young skaters coming up that you feel like can and perhaps could be a part of that conversation?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are skaters coming up, especially already in the senior ranks, who have a lot of potential. I mean, you've got Mariah Bell making a big splash early in the season,
right.
And we'll have to see how this season goes for her. But she's got the potential, right? You definitely have. I think not so much an up and comer, but a bit of a comeback story with Mariah Nagasu. We just saw her land a triple axel in practice, right? Where Thompson Krychuk had sent that out on Instagram. You've got maybe even a glimmer of hope of Caroline Zhang coming back.
Mm.
She was, you know, six triple program in regionals, and you know, hasn't skated like that in quite a while. So
yeah,
you know, we'll see.
For you so far this season, obviously Grand Prix starts with Skate America, but there have been competitions going on, I mean,
yeah.
essentially year-round, but since, let's say, since mid-late August, when it really feels like the season starts to get underway, what are any things that have popped out? You mentioned Yuzuru Hanyu's
yeah.
quad loop, but
yeah.
what else?
I think the thing that's popped up to me this season more than any other one in recent memory is that the number of really... like top-notch skaters who are competing outside of the Grand Prix before they compete in the Grand Prix. You didn't used to see that as much. Two, it didn't used to be as publicized, right?
Hmm.
Like if a Patrick Chan started
sure.
his season in Quebec, you know, 3 years ago, like nobody really talked about it, right? Like with all the streaming and with like the challengers happening,
it's more accessible.
It's much more accessible.
Right.
It's much more widely known, and it stretches out the season for skating fans, but it's
yeah.
also brings a different element to, I think, the way that people prepare for their season. So I think that struck out to me.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Even in that one weekend, we had Patrick, Tessa and Scott,
yeah.
Yuzuru.
Yeah.
I mean, there was all these names that you would see,
yeah.
I mean, that are Olympic medalists and people that I think will expect to be on that medal stand,
right.
or hopefully in 2018.
Yeah, and they're doing international travel to do this stuff, right? Like, it's
mm.
not just local kind of club competitions like it used to be.
So, Jackie, we're going to have Ashley Wagner on the podcast
yeah.
here in just a few minutes, but I want you to talk about last year, and you and I were both at TD Garden in Boston
yep.
and witnessed what she did. And I think that moment for her was a big one. I guess, did that surprise you at all? And as what she has done, that late career renaissance, has it surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, that was a big moment for a lot of people, especially in that arena. Like, I still feel goosebumps every time I think about that moment. Same. It was pretty incredible. You know, I think every single year she kind of defies the laws of gravity a little bit more, right? And if you look back at her career, like in 2007 when she was world junior bronze medalist, it wasn't her show. She was not really the up and comer. It was Caroline Zhang. It was Mariah Nagasu, and then the next year.
And she said that. She said she's always felt like sort of the outsider.
Right. Yeah. And she wasn't the one with like the pretty spins and the like everything kind of looking like it was there. And she worked her way to it, right? You know, every single year was kind of like, okay, almost, and we keep talking about her as the almost girl back in the day, and then something clicked. And I think it really is like the change of the coaching environment to John Nix way back when,
right?
4 years ago, I guess now.
Still way back
when. Way back when in figure skating years. And then the transition to Raf, like, just watching her practice is night and day compared to what it was, you know, 3-4 years ago, even, where you see her do drills, you see her be very disciplined in what she's doing. You know, she has a plan now. You know that she knows that if she can work hard and if she can stay injury free, that it gets her to a level that she knows she can get to. And that's what's been surprising, right? That she has been able to do that, and she has been able to set her mind to it and actually get there. And that's really the surprise for me.
Do you think Boston then was an anomaly, or do you think that in the next two seasons we could see her on first in Helsinki and then Pyeongchang in the medal stand?
I don't think that was an anomaly at all. It was right there at the Japan Open. She came out a few days ago and skated one of the best free skates that she's ever skated, right? You can see that as something that, you know, last year she did the same thing, I think, at Skate Canada, and then she kind of dropped off the radar for a bit. I think what you're going to see this year is something that's a little bit more paced, a little bit more, you know, the plan is there now that she understands what it's like to be kind of up at the top, and she's got a plan to stay at the top. So, you know, I am all for the Ashley and Raf planning committee. I think it works.
Yeah,
and I think
Raf seems to work for her.
Exactly. It's a great combination.
Yeah. Final thoughts on the season to come. I mean, we sort of went over and sort of flew over the season as far as what's to come. Tessa and Scott, I think that comeback is big. But each of the disciplines have so much, I think, to chew on.
Yeah.
And it's to me, it feels like the perfect setup for the Olympic season still to come, right? We have Helsinki in this next year, and then we really start to lead towards 2018. But this feels like there's some new faces, there's a lot of old storylines, and then there's also going to be the unexpected this year and next season with that Olympic push.
Yeah, I came out of Boston 6 months ago saying that was the best Worlds I'd ever seen.
Oh, right? The quality was...
I am a 26-time World Championship watcher. And, like, you know, it was pretty incredible, the level of skating everywhere. And I think it's going to top that this year, right? So we'll see where it goes. I hope I don't hear feeling good nearly as much as I did last year.
I don't think you will.
I do.
I hope you won't. We heard it at a bar the other day discussing this podcast.
We sure did. We sure did.
That was destiny.
I almost fell out of my chair. but I think we're going to see some great skating. I think it's going to start reaching back out to the masses a little bit more now that we're a year and a half away from Pyeongchang. So very exciting. Looking forward to it. Hope I don't collapse anytime soon.
Tell people before you do collapse, which
I assume isn't anytime soon.
How do we follow you and make sure that we're staying at least on top of the sport via you? Because you're the one that is watching, I feel like, every single jump, spin, and crossover out there?
Well, follow me on Twitter, at rockerskating, R-O-C-K-E-R. And my website is www.rockerskating.com.
Awesome. Jackie, thank you so much. I've been talking with Jackie Wong of Rocker Skating fame, and I love that, a 26-time World Championship watcher. That'll be 27 this year. Jackie's going to stick around. We've got our next segment with Ashley Wagner, the 3-time U.S. champion, on our debut episode of the Ice Talk podcast here on Ice Network. Well, I want to extend a warm welcome to 3-time U.S. champ Ashley Wagner joining us on the podcast for the first time in our debut episode. She's an Olympic bronze medalist in the team event and a silver medalist at this year's World Championships. Ashley, does that last part always, I mean, is it still sinking in at this point, or how does it feel?
No, it's still absolutely sinking in for me. It's so surreal. I mean, I worked so hard to accomplish that. And then to really be able to hear my name and then hear world silver medalist after that, it's absolutely insane. So I'm still over the moon.
Yeah, and of course, you just heard that a couple of times when you're at the Japan Open a couple of days ago, which, you know, a good number of figure skating fans stayed up in the middle of the night to watch it from the States. So what is your usual routine after a big competition like this from international?
For me, I just try to really bury my head and get back to work. I mean, the jet lag from Japan is always really hard for me to deal with, but the best thing for me to do is just get back on the ice and kind of get back to work with everything that I learned from the competition. It was an awesome first outing for me, so I know what I have to do. I know I have to get in a little bit of better shape, and so I just kind of got straight back onto the ice and got to work.
Ashley, I feel like the last time we really saw you, at least most figure skating fans, was Boston and that happy moment, and I think the sort of pinnacle from all that hard work. Do you take any momentum from what you did in Boston, or how are you able to apply what you did then and there into this season and moving forward?
I think that Boston is kind of it's a tricky situation for me because it's absolutely, you know, a dream come true, but at the same time, I have to kind of keep the momentum that I gained for myself, because the last thing that I want to do is kind of go out and not really show up to these events as a world silver medalist and kind of take away from what I achieved. And I think going into this season, having it be a pre-Olympic season, it's really important for me to kind of keep everything going. So I have to really be proud of what I accomplished, but in a way I kind of have to move on from that and focus on this season and just kind of keep the pace up. I knew this summer that there was going to be a lot of pressure on me this coming season, so I worked really hard, and technically I feel like I am even stronger than I was at the end of last season. So I think it's really just about, you know, putting my head down and focusing at these competitions and getting my job done.
Yeah, so part of that season is two very different and new programs for you from different choreographers, Jeff Buttle and Shaylin Bourne. Can you talk us through both of those? Maybe start with that Sweet Dream short.
I had such a hard time choosing music for this season because I had two fantastic programs that I loved last year, and I knew that those programs are kind of the style that I want for myself going into the Olympics. So I had to do something totally different from what I'm planning on doing Olympic year, so that it doesn't really seem like I'm a broken record and I can only do one kind of a program. So I knew that whatever I ended up doing, it had to be a polar opposite of what I've ever done before. Sweet Dreams actually was the last program that I chose of the two. I got it choreographed at the end of the summer just because I kind of ran out of time.
Right.
And it was a show program that I had used a couple of years back, and I just kind of was thinking about what I really want for myself for, you know, my last set of programs, really. And I wanted something that I absolutely loved, and I remembered being on the ice performing that number and just feeling like this tough chick, this strong woman, and that's like what I'm all about. And I think that it has a sex appeal that is totally different from my short program last year, but sex appeal nonetheless, and I'm really excited to get out onto the ice because it's, you know, my own little party out there, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that in the exhibition in the Japan Open,
Oh, that was a hot mess.
But what was not a hot mess was that that free skate. I mean, that was, what, like your fourth best free skate result ever, right? And at the very beginning of the season, right? And I think the recent success of your free skates have always been about kind of character-driven programs. And we saw that from Black Swan on to Moulin Rouge last year, right? So I would love to hear about what your free skate this season what you're trying to kind of get at with the more conceptual, abstract exogenesis, right? I think it's a big departure for you.
This season, I knew that I had to kind of portray my acting skills the best that I could. I really feel that last season, that's what kind of clinched that silver medal for me, the fact that I could make an arena feel something and I could tell a story. But I knew that I didn't want to do something similar to last year. I wanted to really get off of that track. Last year, you know, I went in and I had a character and people already knew the story, and that kind of did a lot of the legwork for me because there was music that was telling people exactly what to feel, and you know, people had a basic idea of who Satine was and what Moulin Rouge was about. But this year, I decided to really challenge myself, and this long program definitely is more conceptual, and I think what I like most about it is that everybody kind of takes away what they want from it. Everyone has a different interpretation of what my story is about, and I definitely have my own kind of private story, but at the end of the day, I think that the message is very clear that, you know, it's just that pain and that anguish that you feel of losing someone or something that is just your life and your world, and you know, kind of trudging your way through that really dark spot and wishing that you could just start everything over again and make everything fresh and new and get rid of all that pain. But at the end of the day, kind of realizing that you have to be able to forgive yourself and give yourself your own clean slate before you can ever really move forward in life with anything and anybody else. And you have to end your day being satisfied with yourself before you can work on
everything else. That's a lot to unpack in a free skate.
I mean, oh my god, this is like therapy. Every time sometimes I end it in tears and I'm like, oh my god, I need to like go talk to my therapist. This program is a lot.
I mean, what's so interesting about that program is that it could that program. You know, we saw Jeremy do it first, right? That music, and we've seen other people try to emulate or use that music, and it always ends up being kind of like a pretty program, whoever skates it. And I think what's interesting about what you're doing is you really let the music take you and let it build your choreography. You know, the first minute is so different from the second minute, is so different from the third minute. So it's really an interesting way for you to kind of go outside the box and do something conceptual.
Yeah, when I listen to this music, because it's much prettier music than I typically skate to. Yeah. It's much slower music than I typically skate to. But I wanted it to have variety, and I wanted to really just like make those moments of calm like so juicy and rich with pauses, and so that people can really just enjoy the music, because the music is really the beautiful part. I'm not the beautiful skater, it's the beautiful music, and I'm just trying to emulate that the best I can. And then, you know, once the words really come in, that's when the story is being told, and it's raw and it's gritty and it's real. So I don't think that, you know, life is pretty imperfect all the time, and I think that that's kind of what that second half of the program is really about. It just being this complicated mess of everything, and you know, then I get away with like some sloppy skating, and that's okay. I'm fine with that. I'm feeling things, you know. I'm busy feeling. I can't do a proper crossover.
Well, actually, I want to. Oh, did you want to finish that thought? Go ahead.
I just wanted a lot of dimension to the program, but at the same time, I knew that those moments of calm had to be so serene, and I couldn't, you know, go up and down and up and down and up and down. It just has to build to the end, and then hopefully, you know, like everybody is sobbing by the last. That's my goal, just to make everyone cry.
Oh, that's a good goal to have. So, I think.
Hashtag sobbing for Ashley.
Yes. Jackie will get that trending. Well, that's actually, good. Speaking of the second half or latter half of your free skates, I'm curious, you know, the conversation around you continues to be about your age and how you are sticking around, but how has your off-ice training changed as your body has changed? And, you know, how have you tried to make sure that you are the athlete that can skate that second half of the free skate and feel like you're as strong as you were at the start?
Absolutely. You know what? Ironically, even though I'm a grandma in figure skating years, I feel stronger and like I'm a more put together athlete now than I did when I won my first national title. Mm. I think that it's really just about how you treat your body, and I have gotten so much better with recovery and warming up and just like prepping myself for practice. And then beyond that, the way that I train is just so much smarter and more efficient, and I'm really about drilling the second half of that program so that, you know, I can get into competition. First half is, I mean, it's not easy, but at the end of the day, like, if you can't get to the first three jumps in your program for a long program, what are you doing? And so I drill the second half to the point that I can't feel my legs anymore, and I'm exhausted, and it hurts, and it's not fun, but that way I know when I get into competition that I can do it when I have no legs left in me. I can do it when I've done three jumps before and I'm nervous. So it's really just about mentally getting myself to the point that I know that I can push and that I can push and be okay. And I think that that's really what has helped me out later on in my career. And then, you know, like there are women that are competing in their, you know, different sports at, you know, 40. Do I want to be figure skating when I'm 40? No. I'm so far away from an ice rink by then. But I think that skating has this youth-obsessed culture, and 25 years old is just, you know, to most sports, just another athlete. And so that's kind of what I see myself as, and I'm just training myself to be another athlete that is mentally and physically prepared.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like for you, one of the things that you keep doing every season is try to improve some aspect of your skating that you feel like is kind of lacking. And, you know, you've made it pretty clear that you're not a big fan of spins, and neither was I when I was skating. You did go and took from a spin expert, spin doctor, if you will, right? Tell us about that.
I know my strengths, I know my weaknesses, and I think that that is one of my strengths as an athlete. I know what I hate, and usually what I hate are things that I really need to work on. This summer, I went to go work on my spins. I needed some pressure spins. I needed some speed. I needed some poise, some new positions. And I think that the work that I've been putting in the past couple of months has really paid off. And I feel like my spins were not memorable before. And in fact, most people were just wishing they were over, just like I was. And now I have, you know, my two combination spins at the end of my program. So first of all, I don't feel like I'm saving myself in the spins for the rest of the program. And I can really just kind of enjoy the spin, make it a highlight, make it something beautiful that people want to watch. So I think I've got a long ways to go, but it's definitely a good start for the spin in the season.
Ashley, how often do you actually think back to, I mean, have you found yourself thinking back to Boston or somehow watching yourself on YouTube? Is that something you've done, or do you just, is it just in the past and you're like, huh, I've got the silver medal now and I want more hardware?
You know, it's kind of a double mentality. I was having a really hard time getting back into the season and just getting back into training. That's one thing, when you get older, every single year gets harder and harder and harder to like get back into training. And I remember just being kind of like meh about like starting run-throughs and, like, getting all this done. And then I sat myself down. I watched my long program, and that feeling that I got at the end of seeing the audience on their feet and seeing everyone sharing this moment with me and how awesome that felt, that was kind of inspiration to just, like, get my butt in gear and get going, because I want more moments like that. I want to feel like that in my career. So, yes, I have watched it for inspiration to, like, get my butt in gear. And then other than that, like going into this season now, like I have the momentum. I'm ready to go. I'm hungry, and I need to just not focus on that silver medal and get my job done.
And so you've got Skate America coming up in a few weeks, and then you've got Cup of China coming up as well. What are your expectations this season? What are you looking to improve on, or what any goals that you particularly have?
You know, I think going into nationals last year, my mentality was great. Of course, I would love to be a national champion, but my job was just to get myself on through Worlds. It was another run through, and then I was going to qualify for Worlds. And I think that's kind of my mentality for this season. Last year, I started off so strong, and then my Grand Prix season beyond that was a hot mess. and this year, I definitely think that I'm pacing myself better, and I'm not ready to peak at Skate America, but I'm ready to kind of just build throughout the season and work my way up to Worlds. So I think that each performance that I put out, it's going to be more practice to just make sure when I'm nervous, I get myself to the spots that I need to be for my jumps, that I work on my endurance and keep on kind of toying around with performing in general. And just kind of, I have only a couple competitions left for the Olympics, so every single competition I put myself out there is an opportunity to skate under pressure and perform for an audience and figure out what I want to do and how I want to feel leading into Pyeongchang. So it's all just practice leading up to that.
Ashley, is that stuff that you and Raph, you know, fully talk through? I mean, sort of the goal, you know, what's my goal for Skate America or Cup of China, or, you know, how are we treating this season with the Olympics?
Yeah, that's something that we go over a bunch, and I think that communication for us is key. We both speak different languages, like in actual life and just in life in general. So for us to be on the same page is really important. So I think that I've told him my end goal, what I want, and he kind of tells me how he thinks it's best for me to get there, and then we kind of adjust along the way together.
I want to know how you think Raph would do on the podcast. Would we be able to?
Oh my God, no! You told me that you wanted this to be 15 minutes. You'd be on for an hour and a half. And he would mention like a Ferrari and like how skaters are like Ferraris, and then he'd complain about something, and then he'd talk about Ferraris again. That's how it'd go.
And then he'd hang up on my questions.
Yeah,
he'd just be like, next question, I don't get that.
Oh, I mean, for you, has that continued to feel like the right, it seems as though it's felt like the right training setup, and the little, you know, the little sort of changes you've made are the ones that you feel like can only improve your situation with him?
Yes, I think I have done a fantastic job at surrounding myself with people that only help me and add to my career and my life, and having Raph as my leading man, I think I'm in the best hands. I think he knows how to get me where I want to go. And he took on a 23-year-old who should have been at the end of her career, and he's completely given me a second career, basically. So if someone who believes in me and can actually, you know, turn words into action that much, there's no person I'd rather be with. And my training situation, we're at a new rink, and I cannot, you know, say how amazing it is enough just to be able to kind of go into a safe place and do my work and not have to worry about anything else.
Well, Ashley, thank you for joining. What's the hashtag that we're going to start?
Hashtag sobbing for Ashley.
Yes, hashtag sobbing for Ashley. Please, I would cry. If I saw that on Twitter, I would start.
That's the next button I'll bring you.
Oh, thank God.
Well, Ashley, thanks so much for joining us on Ice Talk. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much, guys.
I want to thank all of you for joining us on our first ever episode of Ice Talk, the new figure skating podcast from Ice Network. We'll be back next week with a Skate America preview featuring longtime Olympic reporter and my fellow Ice Network contributor, Phil Hirsch, as well as Gracie Gold, the two-time national champion. Both of them call Chicago their hometown, and Skate America lands back in that area October 21 to 23 at the Sears Center Arena. A big thanks to my partner in crime for our first episode, Jackie Wong of Rocker Skating, and the one, the only, the sassy Miss Ashley Wagner, both joining us for this debut episode of Ice Talk. Again, we want your feedback. It's always welcome to the Ice Network Twitter handle or to me at Nick McCarville. You can find our podcast posted when it goes live on icenetwork.com or subscribe to our page. It's a fancy one on iTunes.
This has been the first of what I know will be many, many thrilling episodes to come. From the Ice Network studios in downtown Manhattan, a big thanks to my producer, Kate Sullivan. She's the best. I'm Nick McCarville for Ice Talk. Thanks for taking us for a spin. We'll talk to you soon.